This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Let's start the week off right on a Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Welcome in Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you coming off a tremendous sports weekend. The NFL draft is in the books. We got the NHL and NBA postseason going on, which good for some, not so good for others. Michael, how are we feeling right now about your 76ers?
Well, I feel like I felt all along. I mean, look, they've never gotten past the second round. They won't get past the first round this year. It's 8 years of this, 10 years total. Naturally blame the fans. But the reality here is, you know, this has been an ongoing problem for me for a long, long time, Stormy, because I just don't think you can win with when your best player is your laziest player, when he has got incredible talent, great jump shooter, right? But when you can't rebound the ball, no rebounds, no rings. Isn't that what the Lakers used to say all the time? They can't rebound. They have the 7'4", 7'2" guy who's bigger than anybody, and they can't get a rebound. Well, but yeah, I don't know if you know this. The ball just bounced the wrong way. That's what was going on there. But I was flying back. I watched it. I didn't even react. There wasn't one curse word on the plane coming crossing America. I promise you, there was none. Very poised. Didn't handle that. It was all good. I loved watching the Clippers and the Mavericks. I thought the Mavericks, you know, made that great comeback and then just didn't have enough gas in the tank to finish it off. I think that's a great series. And then I got to thinking, I don't know how you felt, but what do you do if you're Phoenix? Yeah. You've given away your draft picks. You paid Bradley Beal a ridiculous amount of money. You know, Kevin Durant isn't the same player. Booker's still great. But where are we going? I mean, when are we going to stop this collection of all-star mentality in the NBA and look towards Oklahoma City, which does it right, or Minnesota, which give Tim Connelly a lot of credit? He went up there and rebuilt that team.
Yeah, Michael, has anyone accomplished less with more than the Phoenix Suns right now? Booker, KD, Bradley Beal, when they were on the floor together in this series, they were minus 51. That was the worst of any three players in the playoffs at all to this point. Michael, that's crazy to think about the money that you've invested in these three players. And when they're on the floor, this is the group that you thought was going to take you to an NBA championship. And instead, out of the first round, they're the worst group of three that we've seen, period.
Well, I mean, at some point, when do you realize that, you know, maybe this collecting of all-stars isn't the right way to build a team?
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't work. You know, Durant's complaining that he doesn't know where he fits on the offense. I find that hard to believe. I mean, poor Frank Vogel, he's going to pay a price for this. I'm sure it'll be his fault. You know, when they haven't looked like a good team, we said it last year when they put this together, we said, look, they're going to have to really have depth and stay healthy. They have to find it somewhere because we know this doesn't work.
So
you have to have three great players on a team, but you have to play like a team. It's like Philadelphia's problem. How many years have we heard, and you've heard it too, well, they just have to get the right players around Embiid. Well, who are they? We've been 8 years. Where do you come from? You can't get the right players around Embiid because he's 7'2". And you would think if we just surround him with jump shooters, everything will be good. But he's one of the jump shooters. He's shooting from 3-point line, you know? So I think to me, it's team building is an art in the NBA, and you better be good at it. Conley in Minnesota is good at it. That's pretty clear. Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, he's good at it. That's pretty clear. Philadelphia, not so good at it.
Credit Anthony Edwards, by the way, as well, in that game and in this series. He had 40 points, 31 of those 40 coming in the second half against the Suns, a career high 7 made threes. He averaged 38 points on the Suns' home court. As the Timberwolves get their first sweep in the postseason, they knock off the Suns that final game, 122-116. The 76ers' final score, for anyone who missed it, they fall 97-92, for now a 3-1 hole, which is something they have never been able to get out of in the postseason, Michael. And I do want to play, like, don't yell at me, okay? But I do want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here for Joel Embiid, who played an entire second half for the first time in his career, regular season or postseason. Of course he's gassed, but he has to stay on the court because the minute he sits on the bench, the other team goes on a 10-0 run. Like, nobody else can do anything outside of him. So I do feel from him from that standpoint that everything is on his shoulders. He's still recovering from an injury when he was injured and rehabbing. Obviously, the conditioning already isn't there, so now it's even worse. So, of course they're struggling. Of course he's struggling.
Well, whose fault's that? I mean, look, you sign Mo Bamba in the offseason. You give Pat, you match the Utah deal to Paul Reed, and then you don't play him. I mean, you know, look, here's the reality of it is, I mean, you should rest him in the first half. Because one thing that we know, what the evidence has come in overwhelmingly, whether he plays 44 minutes, whether he plays 41, whatever he plays, the fourth quarter has been a disaster. He's gassed by the fourth quarter. You know, and so he plays the entire first quarter. Maybe you play him 6 minutes. Maybe you rest him in the first quarter. And then you know that you can't rest him in the fourth quarter. You need him. But when he turns down jump shots that he typically would make, and then he goes to the rim and he gets it stuffed, he's got nothing. I mean, Doris Burke said it so well. He's gassed in pregame. No. I mean, the guy has never been in shape, Stormy. This is the difference between, and all your criticism is correct, but the difference between me and you is this: being in shape is always masqueraded around some other ailment. He's got a bad knee, or he's got a bad elbow. He's got can't see. He's got a worse. Like, he never gets in shape. He's never changed his body. And so, therefore, as talented as he is and as remarkable as he is, you fall well short. And for somebody who's spent 40 years of his life evaluating talent, you know, I gravitate away from guys who have elite talent but no competitive fiber. And look at his fourth quarter and look at his playoff numbers.
All fair points. And now as they try to work their way out of this 3-1 hole, they're a 4-point dog at the Garden coming up tomorrow, total 203.5. And if Joel Embiid didn't like the crowd in Philly, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, just wait until they're back there in New York.
Always an excuse.
Michael, because
always an excuse.
Because we're talking about talent evaluations and building teams, that's a huge staple of what was going on this weekend in Detroit with all of these NFL teams in the draft. We finally have everybody selected, cemented in what's going to happen moving forward. Now that we're through the weekend, is there one team that you walked away thinking, wow, they did a really good job? And again, this is all on paper. We are not on grass yet. We don't know what these players are going to be like for another 2-3 years. But from what you saw from an evaluation standpoint, who did the best?
You know, I really look, Pittsburgh has won 10 games without quarterbacking with a bad team. With guys on defense, you're like, whoa, what is this? But they add Patrick Queen this offseason. They get what I think is one of the better defense players in the draft, you know, which I think was critical for them. They get Peyton Wilson from North Carolina State, who I'm sure you've seen, Stormy, many times, right? This kid's all over the field making tackles. And that's something that this Pittsburgh Steelers team has needed really badly, is to replace Ryan Shazier. He is this defense that they run in Pittsburgh, going back to Dick LeBeau, going back in time, relies on inside-out speed, and they haven't really had it with the Landon Roberts. They really haven't with Cole Holcomb. They've tried to sign guys. It just hasn't worked. Miles Jack, all those guys. This time, I think they have it with Queen and now with Wilson. And we know they're going to be good if T.J. Watt's healthy on defense. And then offensively, you know, one of the struggles has been this offensive line. But they draft a really good center from West Virginia, Jack Frazier. He's going to be a plug-and-play, 1,200 plays. Fatumi is going to come in there. Fatuna is going to go in there and start at left tackle to go with Broderick Jones, another starting right tackle, first-round pick last year. And then they get Roman Wilson as the third receiver in the third round, which I think he'll give them as many plays as Rome Odunze will give the Bears, because they'll be able to play. Now, will he play better than Rome? I don't know. But this team's ready to go. And the fact that Arthur Smith, who gets so much critique in terms of his head coaching acumen, that he's a good offensive coordinator. Like, this team's ready to go. I like this team a lot on paper. And we know that Tomlin wins 10 games with his eyes closed.
Take that over every year. If you've been betting against him, you've been losing tickets. Well, let's go to the Bears, though, who you mentioned, who at the number one overall pick, obviously take Caleb Williams as expected, get the best player in the draft based on, you know, statistical information. He's been favored to be in that spot for the last 2 years. They go get Rome Odunze at 9 to add to what is already seeming to be a very talented, offensive, skilled group for Chicago. Only made 5 picks, but all 5, to me at least, seem like they can help them now. They get the offensive lineman from Yale, who I'm not going to even pretend to try to say his name, in the third, who's gotten he's gotten really good reviews, although obviously it's a big step up from Yale to the NFL step in terms up of competition. And fifth round flyer on pass rusher Austin Booker out of Kansas. They take Troy Taylor, the punter from Iowa, who Lord knows that guy's had reps. What were your thoughts on the Bears draft as a whole?
Well, look, it's all going to come down. We know they're going to be better offensively. I mean, in the last five games of the year, the most points they scored was 17 points, right? I mean, so they couldn't move the ball. And they've obviously addressed that with Keenan Allen gives them a third down player. Adunze, they're going to have to be an 11 team, which I'm not sure will work. I thought they should have gone more towards the defensive end. They feel like their defense is ready to go. Now, when you look at the second half of the season, you say, well, they play good defense. Well, I'm always a concern because when you're so bad on offense, the other team doesn't try to kind of exploit you. Opening day, when everybody was healthy, they gave up 38 points at home to Green Bay. Now, can they improve? Sure. But I do agree with you. They're going to be better offensively, which is going to make their defense better. I would have taken the pass rusher. I would have taken Lutua, mm-hmm. or I would have taken Murphy with the ninth pick and not another receiver. But that, you know, that's how the art of team building in the NFL today is all about. It's all about the ability to find receivers.
I was really surprised to see, honestly, how much a lot of those talented edge rushers and defensive linemen fell, considering Leatu Latu is the first off the board at, 15? The win total for the Chicago Bears, yeah. Michael, 8.5. Do you expect, you know, year one under Caleb Williams for this Chicago team to have a winning season?
Well, look, it's going to get bet to 9. If you like it, you better take it right now. You know, because I think we know Bear fans. I said this on Mitch and Pauly today. They put their money where their mouth is. They're going to bet the over here because they're so excited about their team. And they're going to bet Caleb to be Rookie of the Year. You're not going to get better numbers than you're going to get today for the Bears.
Plus 200 for Caleb Williams to be that offensive Rookie of the Year. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. Stick around. Lots more drafted NBA conversation on the way.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, make sure you check out VSiN.com each and every day for all of the latest when it comes to NBA, NHL playoffs. We even got NFL draft grades up, betting splits for each and every game on the slate, telling you where the money is going, where the public opinion does not match, where that movement is coming from. Plenty of betting tools, betting guides, everything you need in your one-stop shop on vsin.com. With that said, we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And the draft is officially in the books. How about the scene, by the way, out there in Detroit, Michael? 775,000 people, the ratings, the best that we've seen for a first round. It was awesome.
Did you see the ratings? I mean, other than one college game, one college regular season game, they beat everything. The NBA, NHL, World Series. I mean, it's remarkable, right? You know, and it was 50 degrees. It was cold, but yet people were there. You know, you really can't underscore what a great sports town Detroit is. I mean, unfortunately, the Lions have now made the comeback, but the Pistons, when they were great, it's a great sports town. High school football is great in that state. College football is great in that state. So they came out, and it's so close to Chicago that you got all those Bear fans there, and we know those Bear fans. I mean, look, they are passionate about their team. So what a great, great, great scene.
Yeah, they showed out, and I feel like it's such a great reminder, once again, that the NFL is king, and there is no real offseason. This is a 24/7, 365 league, and the interest does not die down with that. People want it and seek it and crave it, and it was a fun event. I do feel bad for Roger Goodell, though. He might have a broken back, needs to see the chiropractor or a surgeon afterwards with getting picked up on the stage the way that he was. But Michael, we talked in the first block about some of the teams that impressed you. And then, of course, the Chicago Bears, who had the first overall pick. Thoughts there. What teams left you kind of scratching your head a little bit with the group that they put together?
Well, I think, look, the Brock Bowers pick is a little bit like the Michael Penix pick. It's like, seriously, is this what we need? And I'm told reliably there were people in that draft room that were not exactly ecstatic, high up people, about that pick, because yes, he's your highest rated player on the board. You know what cracks me up, Stormy? If we go by this highest rated player on the board, could there have been a player rated higher than JJ McCarthy for the Chargers? I mean, Jim Harbaugh came out and said he's by far the best quarterback in the draft, right? But the Chargers didn't pick him at 5 because they understand they had an investment. I think to me that I like Brock Bowers, but this team doesn't have any offensive linemen other than Colton Miller. Now, you know, they called DeAndre James to assure him that, you know, that he was their starting center. I mean, we've seen this before, right? You've got an undersized quarterback. I think you really need to be good. Now, they draft Jackson Powers Johnson, who's never really – he could play guard. We'll see, you know. But I think they have three guards, Parnum, James, and Jackson, and not a lot of good guards. And then they don't have a good right tackle. So it's going to be really interesting. And then the quarterback. I mean, what would you say, based on their team, could this team come back and compete and win the West? Mm-hmm. I don't. I mean, who's going to have the first pick overall in the draft next year? I think that's a fair question to ask. I don't know how the Raiders are going to be able to. They have weaponry, but they just don't have a quarterback. I mean, we saw Gardner Minshew, to me, is like a middle reliever. You throw him four innings, great. Five innings, he's not a starter. Not nine games. I mean, just ask the Colts.
Well, Michael, if they're terrible, the good news or bad news is Shedeur Sanders is an even money favorite to be the number one overall pick next year.
I saw that. I saw that. Now, you talk about a program taking a little bit. I mean, Colorado State went from a sellout in the spring game down to 24. I mean, the players are starting to transfer out of Colorado, not into Colorado. That'll be interesting to see them this year, Stormy. I can't wait to get your report from Boulder on this team.
There was another player that transferred out of Colorado recently that even used the Dan Lanning line of saying that he's, you know, playing not for clicks, which was interesting dig at obviously his former program in Colorado and Coach Prime. Another team I wanted to get your thoughts on, Michael, because obviously we dug in deep on the Atlanta Falcons' decision to draft Michael Penix at number 8 overall just 6 weeks after paying Kirk Cousins $100 million in guaranteed money, and judged the question of when you have the worst pass rush, like ESPN's pass rush win rate this past year, they were ranked 32 of 32, which is not a good place to be, yet they elected to get more quarterback depth. What did you think of the way that they handled the rest of the draft? Because clearly they did prioritize D-line and defense.
Well, they drafted a defensive tackle that was, you know, that was really athletic. Unfortunately, here's the bad news. You ready? He just wasn't instinctive. He didn't make a lot of tackles, didn't make a lot of plays, and is not a pass rusher, but he looks pretty. He looks good. And, you know, we've seen this before, right? When this happens all the time, when they put up the graphic that he was that he was, and I can't say his last name because it's too difficult. When he went up there, there you go. Thank you, Stormy. You know, I mean, the fact that he was third team all ACC and you're picking him at the 35th pick in the draft, that doesn't tell you he had a lot of production. Well, there had to be other great tackles in the ACC. Can we visit that again? So I thought that was a strange pick, because the kid that went right after him from Illinois was really a good defensive tackle. The kid Fisk that went to the Rams at the top of the fifth. He was really a good player. Like, they passed over two good tackles to take this guy who was a workout warrior. But when you don't have instinct as a defensive lineman, that's always a trouble for me. So I don't know if they've gotten – here's the thing. How many plays are they going to get out of these guys? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, they're going to hope that their defense is good enough to go through it, because I don't see them getting the pass rush to improve it. Remember, they were 29th in the league in forcing turnovers last year.
And meanwhile, very high expectations for this Falcons team going into 2024. They're a $3 favorite to make the playoffs, despite having not been in that position in the last 7 years. -130 to win the NFC South, 6th in the NFC at 11-1, and a win total of 9.5. They also did not go corner in this draft, but you know who did? The Philadelphia Eagles, Michael, who got two of what many people could, like on some boards, were the two best corners in the draft, in Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, who they took in the first round. What did you think of the way that the Eagles put things together here? Because I think they're a clear winner on paper.
No question. Clear winner on paper. Then they get Becton as a swing tackle at a cheap deal, and see if their line coach can kind of get him in, because he's a dominating run blocker. The Eagles went into this draft playing with house money. They had every position on their roster settled in terms of depth. Then they added more picks afterwards. So they were able to get more picks and they were cashing in. Remember, Stormy, this draft was a lot about not having very good juniors in it. Why? Because NIL. The schools are paying these kids to stay in school. You know, you used to couldn't do that. Well, I got to go out. I got to make money. I get it. You got to go. But look, now NIL, you could stay, you know, and I'll give you a raise. One of the things teams are going to start doing now is monitoring players, how much more money they make based on the season they had. It's a pretty good indication. If you're a good player at the University of Arizona and I'm paying you $100,000 and you want to think you're leaving, I'll pay you $250,000. Keeps you here. So I think that watered down the draft. That's why Philly traded away those late picks. But to get Mitchell, the best man-to-man corner in the draft, to get Dejon, who's really a kind of a tweener. He think of him as the Micah High. Same school. Micah High was a really good player at Iowa. Played free safety, could play some cover two corner, came in the league, played safety. Really a good, could play some nickel with help on top. This really removes Bradbury from the equation where they got to count on him to be a good player. I think it's really the Eagles are in perfect shape. They got to get Huff to be the dominant player that he can be. And they've got to get those two defensive tackles from Georgia to raise their game.
And I think it's probably just a matter of time before they leapfrog the Cowboys in the odds board to be the favorite in the NFC East. Plus 135, their current price, Michael. And speaking of Dallas, they signed Zeke back to a short-term deal after not taking a running back in the draft, which did surprise me a little bit. And obviously, after Jerry Jones raved as much as he did on Jonathan Brooks, he ends up in Carolina at number 46.
Well, I mean, that was early for, I mean, Brooks is a good player. Carolina, that was interesting that they would they traded up to get a running back, which kind of goes against it. And most of the backs went in the fourth round. But, you know, Carolina had other needs to me. But, again, this is all about making the quarterback look good. Look, here's what I think happened in the draft room. And this is only from experience, not from somebody telling me. But they looked over the running backs and they said, well, we could sign Zeke at $3 million. We can get him. We know we have him. Would we rather use this for a pick or we'd rather use it for something else? And I think that's ultimately the decision. I said this to Femi on the pod. I really think they like Deuce Vaughn more than maybe they let on they do. I think Deuce Vaughn gives them a little bit of that Darren Sproles kind of back, you know, change the pace of the game a little bit. And Zeke gives them the pounder. I'm not saying he's as good as Tony Pollard because that's hard to be when Pollard was healthy. But Deuce may be the guy that they think could be something. But they have somebody on their team that they have higher hopes on than we do.
That current running back room, Zeke now, Deuce Vaughn, Royce Freeman, Malik Davis, and Rico Dowdle. Deuce Vaughn, small but mighty. And yeah, I love the Darren Sproles comp. That's one of his idols. They have a good relationship. And I loved watching him at K-State and really hope that he's able to get a bigger opportunity. Zeke averaging 3.5 yards per carry, but he's a power back now. Okay, good in short yardage situations. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. Thomas Gable is going to join us. Take us a little behind the counter. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line on a Monday, and we are fresh off a very busy weekend in sports, Michael. We joke so much about how the summer and the NFL offseason is downtime and we get to the dog days. Not this weekend, between the NFL draft coming to a close, the NBA and NHL postseason, baseball is in full swing. And so, who better to talk it all over with than our guy TG? Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City, joins us now. Thanks to the Progressive guest line. TG, how we doing? How you holding up? The book still standing?
Yeah, we are. We are. We're in the thick of it now with the playoffs and baseball going and PGA Championship now a few weeks away, and we got the Kentucky Derby this weekend. So it's going to be a busy few weeks for us.
I love it. Okay, so you are a New York Philadelphia-based sports book. And I know on the big screen at 12 o'clock you had the beloved 76ers right there in the middle. What was the split in terms of fan bases in the book? And I want to know what the reaction was when Philly lost the game and what Sixer fans were talking about, other than the fact that perhaps they just can't win games.
Well, the split here was actually similar to what I think you saw at the Wells Fargo Center yesterday in person, where there was a lot of Knicks fans present. And same thing here. There were certainly a lot of vocal Knicks. Well, I don't know if they're fans, but at least people who bet on the Knicks and had dollars riding on them in the book yesterday. But it was a good split between the two. And, you know, look, when I think there's plenty of blame to go around in Philadelphia at this point. Michael, as you have pointed out a number of times, we have Mr. Embiid, who essentially disappears in terms of his production in the fourth quarter. And you can certainly blame that on his conditioning. Then you can kind of get into, well, how does Nick Nurse use him? And why is it that Embiid has nothing left in the fourth quarter? Yeah, yes, you can point the blame at Embiid for his level of conditioning. He is injured. He's always injured in the playoffs. We've seen this time and again. Maybe Nurse needs to change the rotations with him and use him less earlier in the game than what he's been doing. Obviously, the role players have not been stepping up at all. Tobias Harris still is nowhere close to even earning his contract. And then you get into even something as ridiculous as yesterday, where the Sixers are blaming Sixers fans for not showing up. Or, well, you know, last time I checked, you could buy tickets on the secondary market. That's available to anybody. And I'm sure Knicks fans obviously are excited this postseason, as well as they should be. They have a very good team. And, you know, they've been starved for a while there in New York for a good Knicks team, one that possibly can challenge. And, you know, you can't blame them for being excited for the way that they look this year and wanting to see them play in person. So the fact that they come out to then come down, make the trip to Philadelphia and buy these tickets on the secondary market, good for them.
Yeah, and Jalen Brunson is turning into a superstar, 47 points in the win, and the MVP chants were definitely something to behold if you were the 76ers there. So go ahead.
This Villanova team is tough to beat, Stormy. They're tough to beat, these Villanova Wildcats.
Well, of course, why would the Sixers try to even – we traded Mikal Bridges, Villanova player, because we wanted Zaire Smith, who one of Josh Harris's partners decided to run an analytical number and said they were the same player and we'll get a first-round pick. That made a lot of sense. But why would we do that? You know, why would we sign DiVincenzo as a free agent when we could trade for Buddy Hield? I mean, why would we do that? I mean, it makes no sense. But all right, let me – I put that away. Stormy, I apologize.
Let's talk
about the real series. Let's talk about the Clippers and the Mavericks. What's the action? What's the line? And where do you think this goes seven? And who do you think wins it?
Yeah, I think this series. I said from the beginning when the playoff pairings came out, this was to me the most interesting series of them all, and certainly one that was pretty easily pegged as could go seven games, and nobody would be shocked. So right now, you have the Mavs 2.5 point favorites for the game in 2 days time. And if the series price right now, Mavs are $1.85 for on the adjusted series price there. And obviously this all comes down to Kawhi and the fact that he's probably going to be unavailable here. If Kawhi was available, you're looking at a much different price on the series, and you're looking at probably the Clippers being favored at home in the next game. But, credit the Clippers, though, yesterday. While they did kind of blow that big lead, they held on and they held tough. And despite what could have been a historic comeback there from Dallas, James Harden, he was able to get it done there down the stretch. Paul George made some key shots. So they're sticking right with them. And I would not be surprised at all to see this series go seven games.
One last thing on the NBA quickly, three games coming up tonight. How many people are laying the five and just saying the Pelicans are going to be done?
Oh, I think that one's a pretty easy one for people. The Pelicans probably are going to be done. The Celtics and Heat game, while this is only game four here, that seemed to be the easiest one for everybody last game because, the Heat were not going to shoot like they did in game two. I think everybody realized that. That was an anomaly for how they shot from three. And really the only advantage that Miami has in that series is coaching. And but give Mazzulla credit. He did make some adjustments there last game, and he got the guards out a little bit more on Miami's guards, got some more pressure. And, you know, whether or not it was just due to regression or stepped up defense there from Boston, Boston took that game easily because Miami did not shoot anywhere close to what they did in the prior game. So Boston, again, 10.5-point favorites here for tonight. And, you know, everybody seems at this point to be comfortable laying that number. And same thing with the Thunder, laying the 4.5 here with the Thunder.
TG, real quick, when do you put out your team totals wins at for BetMGM?
They are up now. So you can bet season win totals now if you want. They've actually been up for about a week or so.
Did the draft make you adjust any of those numbers?
The overall numbers, no. Some juice has gotten moved a little bit, but the overall, in terms of the overall total for each team, no, there hasn't been any adjustments from the draft. Now we'll see. Obviously, I expect a little bit more adjustments too as we come in when the schedule's announced in May. But you know, for right now, there wasn't really too much adjustments going on with that.
TG, when we talk about the draft, we talk a lot about how it's one of those markets where, you know, the house doesn't always win, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. There's opportunity in an information-based market for bettors. Were there some surprises that caught you guys at the book off guard that you lost on?
Well, the total quarterbacks in the first round, 4.5, with that going over, small loser on that one. I mean, the key with booking the draft, you don't want to create big positions for yourself where you can win a lot or lose a lot, because more than likely you're going to get beat on a lot of these markets. So we did our best with that and ended up being a small loser, which was kind of expected when you're booking drafts. You never really want too big of a decision either way. So the quarterbacks there, the Penix, where he went, that cost a little bit of money too. Same with McCarthy. But, you know, I think it was an interesting first round just from an overall football perspective. And obviously there was some, you know, I know you guys have probably covered in depth the Atlanta Falcons decision there to take Penix where they did, which was pretty confounding. But, you know, I think, you know, now that the smoke has cleared and you've seen where everybody has landed, you know, there have been teams that have gotten, at least on paper, have seemed to do pretty well. At least locally, the Philadelphia Eagles, I thought, had a very good draft. And right now they are in the driver's seat for the NFC East. We did move them into the favorite position there in the NFC East over the Cowboys. So originally it was the Cowboys. Now the Eagles have taken over that spot.
Michael, we called it. That switch would happen, yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world, Stormy. I mean, really, seriously, the Eagles are ready to roll where the Cowboys... They still have work to do.
No question. TG, thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Back here on the Lombardi Line next with our division deep dives recapping the NFL draft.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Kentucky Derby time, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? We'll saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in using the code HORSE, H-O-R-S-E. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action only on the DK Horse app. And you know, we talked a little bit about the Kentucky Derby upcoming with Thomas Gable. Later on this week, we'll have Mike Somich, who is all in on horse racing, dropping Sama bombs on the regular. It. Yeah. So it's about that time, Michael, indeed.
It is. It is. I love it. It's always, I mean, I'm not much of a horse. I'm not a better period, but I love the horse racing. I love watching these animals run. It's just absolutely beautiful. It's majestic. I regret, you know, when I was scouting on the road, I regret not being able to go to Lexington and just stare at Secretariat. You know, they said the horse was, the big red was so powerful and so beautiful to look at that, you know, when you're in Lexington, the University of Kentucky, to go over to Louisville, it's not that you can kind of get there, but, you know, you're always in a rush to do something. And I regret, that's one of the things I regret. I have on my board here in the office, Secretariat, in the Belmont with 23 lengths, and the jockey's still hitting his butt to get him to go faster. I love that.
It's great. I personally, I watch it for the names. I make my bets in horse racing based on names, and maybe that's not the way that I should go about it, but that's one of those for fun events, in my opinion. I love horse racing. I always try to get out to Del Mar in the summertime with my family living out there in San Diego, so that should be fun. Speaking of names, there were a lot of them called this past weekend in the NFL draft, and over the last week or so, you and I and Femi have been going through each division and what we think they should do and what they need to do in the NFL draft to help take a positive step in 2024. Now that we have those answers, we're going to continue the deep dives, but reflecting on what each team did. And we'll start today in the AFC East with the New England Patriots, where QB3 overall in this year's draft is the Patriots' hope for QB1 for the future, drafting Drake May. Even if that means sitting behind Jacoby Brissett in 2024, I know calls did come out about a potential trade, but they wanted to stick with their guy, which is what made it that much more interesting, Michael, that later on in the draft, they also took Joe Milton in the sixth round. When your team has so many other needs, does Joe Milton there make sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense from that, right? I mean, obviously, Bailey Zappi, who they've waived before, is no longer on the team. This is just a project. But here's where it becomes a little bit problematic. How do you have enough time to develop two projects? Drake May is going to require all your time and energy to get him going, you know, because he's really a raw player. He's got potential, but he's got to come away with a lot of improvement. And the same thing with Joe Milton. Joe Milton, University of Michigan, went there, you know, got a tremendous amount of talent, can throw the ball from here to the ocean, but can he play quarterback? And that's going to take some time to develop him. And that's where you don't have a lot in the NFL. But look, I don't buy this rhetoric that the Patriots are this depleted roster that they have to rebuild. I mean, look, they would have won 7-8 games if the kicker and the quarterback wouldn't have just been so bad, right? They would have Jacoby Brissett on the team. They probably would have won 8 games just to manage the game correctly. Got a good running back in Stevenson. You know, they've got a lot of, they have some good offensive linemen. I think the Wallace pick in the third round is critical for them. They need a left tackle. Right. They need a left tackle. Okafor is what Elliott Wolf said would be their left tackle to start the season. We watched him in Pittsburgh. But look, this defense is good, and I think they're going to continue to get good. They didn't really touch the defensive board. They went strictly all offense, which surprised people. Yeah. But to me, that was where they needed the most help. And, you know, they've got to get Polk to play well, who they drafted in the second round. Bourne's a good player. Right. I think Bourne's a good player. Demario Douglas, if he could stay healthy, can run with it after the catch. They've got options. So I think, to me, that's going to be the key. Can they get the left tackle to play really well and develop May?
You mentioned Polk. I did think that was an interesting move, trading down and passing on Ladd McConkey to ultimately get him. They did circle back and get another wide receiver in Javon Baker, the Alabama transfer to UCF in the fourth. But let's go to the Buffalo Bills, who traded out of the first round, handing the Chiefs of all teams Xavier Worthy. But with the first pick in the second round, they take Florida State wide receiver Keon Coleman, big body, physical receiver. When you look through what they did in this year's draft, did they do enough to help Josh Allen? Or are they destined to go try to steal one of my 49ers receivers? What's happening here?
No, I don't think so, Stormy. They don't have the cap room to do that. So, but the other thing I think you've got to take into consideration here is Coleman gives them an outside receiver, right? They have a slot receiver in Samuel. They could put Shakir in there too. And naturally, they're going to be a 12 personnel team with Kincaid and Knox. So they need an inside-outside receiver. And then Mac Hollins is really good in the kicking game, and Mac Hollins can run vertically. Like, Mac Hollins could make some plays with Josh Allen's arm. I think they've done enough. I think, look, they've got to stay healthy. The question's going to be, are they good enough on defense? They drafted the young safety, Cole Bishop. They're going to need him to play right away. They signed Mike Evans from the Chiefs to be his to be the starter. You got to believe Bishop's going to beat him out. Same thing with Taylor Rapp. Are they as good at safety as they were when they had Hyde and Poyer? We'll see. And do they have enough pass rush, and can they stay healthy? Look, this is a nickel defense that relies on their ability to play from in front. And that offense is going to have to generate that lead.
The Bills are a plus 160 favorite to win the division again. Tied to the second shortest shot are the Jets and Dolphins, both at 2-1. New York, I was very proud of them for adding depth on the offensive line, Olu Fashanu at number 11 overall after that trade with Minnesota. He's only allowed one sack in his collegiate career. So hopefully that group up front that had 13 different combinations and 64 sacks allowed will give Aaron Rodgers more than four plays this year. But overall, what did you think of the Jets draft?
I really thought it was smart, right? We call them the ifers because they're ifer situation with two 30-year-old tackles, especially one Tyron Smith. And they've done it. Like, if he can come in and play and Tyron's the backup, now that won't work because Tyron's got so much money in incentives that he's going to want to get paid. But look, I think it was the smart play. They get the Corley kid from Western Kentucky, very productive. You know, Mike Williams, if he's healthy, helps their receiving core. So a lot of this is going to come down to, can they stay healthy? Remember, they added Riddick to their team to replace Bryce Huff. So they get another pass rusher to come in there. John Franklin Myers to Denver. I was surprised by that. But I think at the end of the day, they did a smart thing in getting the left tackle. They needed that badly. And everything else after that is, you know, they draft the quarterback from Florida State. I mean, is that really going to matter? They drafted another running back, Brendan Allen. I think all those are for the 25 team, not the 24 team. Because let's face it, everything's going to come down to that line protecting Aaron Rodgers.
Again, we call them the ifers for a reason. If they stay healthy, this team has a ton of potential and could be a legit contender in the AFC. But if they don't, and if one by one we start seeing guys drop like flies, it could be a disaster, which means bad things for Robert Saleh, who's teetering on the edge there as well. They also, by the way, signed Mekhi Becton to a one-year deal yesterday. Let's round things out with the Miami Dolphins, who I mentioned also 2-1. We've talked ad nauseum about how the way they struggled to beat good teams last year. Did the group they put together here do enough to help them get over that hump a little bit in 2024? Chop Robinson, their first pick in the first round at number 21.
Well, the Chop Robinson protects them from Phillips coming back from an ACL, and same thing with Chubb, right? They signed Shaq Barrett as a protection in that area, and now they get Chop Robinson. And then they needed to replace Robert Hunt. You know, they lost him, so they draft Patrick Paul to be the left tackle because we know that Teron Armstead's not going to stay healthy the whole year. Look, this is a lot. I mean, we're going to see the Tua contract come in at astronomical numbers here in the future, but I think this team is – for them to beat good teams, can they hold up at the cornerback position? I think that's going to be the key. Can Kendall Fuller be a starting corner? Is Jordan Poyer have anything left? This secondary is going to be tested. They really are, because that was the weak spot. Look, we know they have a really good player in Jalen Ramsey, but you're going to have to cover other guys. We'll see how the adaption of the scheme and how they fit into what they want to do in terms of the new defense coordinator with Anthony Weaver along with Joe Barry. We want to see how that really works out, because they can say Vic worked them too hard, but they didn't play well when Vic was working them hard. They're going to have to prove that they can play better.
This is a division, Michael, that the last couple years, when you just look at the teams, has felt like and seemed like it would be a gauntlet. Once we actually got onto the football field, it wasn't that way as much. It seems like there's a lot more parity in the division. Who do you think is the team to beat right now with those odds of the first three teams so close?
Well, I think Josh Allen's the best quarterback. And so Buffalo has a complete team. You know, and everybody's worried about their receiving core. I'm not. I'm more worried about, can they play good enough on defense in a battle if they go toe-to-toe? Look, let's face it. if you ask the Kansas City Chiefs who gave them the hardest game, and I know it was played in Buffalo, but the Bills by far. The Bills dominated the game. The Bills are kicking themselves. They should have won that game, and if Bass makes the kick, we're in overtime, and who knows?
They should be kicking themselves, because what was everybody talking about after that game was over? If not now, when? If you can't get over the hump of the Chiefs in your own building, then when is it going to happen? And then you lose some talent. So it's worrisome, but I agree with you. As of right now, Buffalo, still that team in the AFC East. We'll be right back.